You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Please leave your message after the tone.
Hey ELT, this is Michaela, and I had some questions about hummingbirds. So my dad lives just north of Seattle, Washington, and he has several hummingbird feeders, and he gets hummingbirds year-round. So my questions are, how often do hummingbirds need to eat? What do they eat in the winter? And do hummingbirds become dependent to feeders? Thank you.
Hello. Hey, Jorge. We humming?
Oh, sorry, are you there?
What song was that?
Beatles song. Hummingbird Fly, do you know it?
Oh, I do. Yes, I should have got it. That was a perfect rendition.
All right, Michaela, how about we start over? This is Jorge from Every Teeny Tiny, Isn't That the Cutest Little Thing? A little birdie told me that you like hummingbirds?
Yes. The fairies of the forest.
Let's say you had to describe a hummingbird to somebody who'd never seen one. You're like, in three words, how would you describe a hummingbird?
Tiny. Floaty.
Did you say floaty?
I did. Floaty. And attitude.
That's my morning affirmation. I look in the mirror and I go, tiny, floaty, attitude.
Yes.
You wouldn't throw fairy in there?
Yeah, if I'm allowed fairy.
I'll give you four words. Tiny flying fairies.
With attitude.
With attitude. Float. Okay. In your message, you floated some fairy feeding questions for us. Like, you wanted to know, how much do hummingbirds feel the need to feed from your sugar water offering?
And is it good to feed them? Like, my dad and I are wondering if the feeders that he has benefit the hummingbirds, or do they cause them to stick around here and not, like, find food elsewhere? Are they going to die if we forget?
Are you nurturing them, or are you destroying their whole world?
Yes, because, you know, feeding the ducks bread, I heard, is bad for them. And so, you know, you don't want to harm them. So if you can feed them, that would also be good to know.
Right, yeah, you're not going to get canceled.
Right, yes.
Because you're sitting there eating popcorn while you're watching these fairies of flight drink soda all day.
Yes.
Well, Michaela, we found somebody whose heart goes boom, boom, boom when he sees birds go zoom, zoom, zoom.
Yeah, well, I love hummingbirds. I've been studying them for about 13 years. And I've been in different countries chasing them and watching them. And I just want to know more and more every day about them.
That's Alejandro Rico Guevara, and he's one of the biggest names in tiny birds.
Hi, Michaela.
Hi, Alejandro.
I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Alejandro also lives in Seattle, so he's in your neck of the woods.
I am an assistant professor at the biology department at the University of Washington and a curator of birds at the Burk Museum.
Oh, what a neighbor.
It's great to have questions from people in the area.
And you're from Colombia?
Yes, correct. And because you mentioned that, Colombia is the country with most species of hummingbirds. And that's not surprising because Colombia is the country with most species of birds in the world.
Is everybody in Colombia a hummingbird expert?
No, I wish.
According to Alejandro, there's around 165 hummingbird species in Colombia.
Oh, just in Colombia.
Just in Colombia. And if you stack them end to end, they'd reach from here to like your coffee table or something. Very, very small. By contrast, in the land of the 4,000 species of lattes where you live,
yes,
there's only two kinds of hummingbirds.
Oh.
But you get a closer connection. That's the trade-off.
And those two kinds are Anna's hummingbirds and Rufus hummingbirds.
Yeah, I've totally heard of those. I didn't know those are the only two, though.
Yeah. And here's how you tell them apart. Anna's hummingbirds are bigger, and they've got greenish backs, and they look like they're wearing a bright red helmet. And Rufus hummingbirds are smaller and reddish brown. And if you're an expert like Alejandra, you actually don't even need to see them to tell them apart.
So you can tell just by the sound of their wings, even if they are, you know, cruising by, that was a rufous or that was an anas. The rufous hummingbirds have a particular hum, so the humming frequency is a little higher. It's more like a brrrr versus a brrrr, but obviously much faster, right?
Ah, he knows their hum.
Does that sound familiar?
I mean, I certainly know when one goes by that it's a hummingbird, but I'll look out for the if it's a rrr or a rrr.
That was really good. So you wanted to know how often they need to eat. Well, instead of hummingbirds, we should call them num-num-numingbirds because they need a lot of food to stay afloat.
They expend energy at an incredible rate. The energy expenditure is one of the highest in nature because the way of locomotion that they have evolved is the most expensive of all.
Okay.
And so here's what Alejandro means by locomotion. Think of the hummingbirds at your feeder and how they move around. When they fly, they don't just go in one direction, like forward. They go forward, backwards, up, down, sideways. And then sometimes they just dead stop in midair.
Staying in one place requires hovering. And that sustained hovering is unique to hummingbirds.
Oh, wow.
Hummingbirds are high-powered machines, nature's little drones.
They are like drones. They even make the drone sound.
Okay, so I'm going to describe the way they move a little more because it's so different from what other birds do. Are you ready? So put your arms out to your sides, palms down.
Okay.
So now you pretend they're wings and pretend you're a bird, you know, a singing bird or a Tweety bird, not a hummingbird.
Caca!
Perfect. All right, so when you flap them down, you're pushing air down. And then pushing that air down helps keep you up in the air, flying around, looking for BMWs to poop on.
Yes, correct.
But hummingbirds don't just push air down, they also push it up. If you could slow down the motion, it looks almost like they're making figure eights with each wing. Can you imagine that? Flap your arm, but instead do like a figure eight forward and backward.
Yeah. So it's almost like treading water when you're swimming.
Exactly. Yes. You can definitely try that. You know, next time you're in the water, try that and you will feel like a hummingbird.
Except for I have all the support of that water. So next time I'm falling out of a tree, I should try it and feel like a hummingbird.
Right. Now imagine doing that up to, you know, like 40, 50 times per second. So it's a lot of energy.
That's tiring.
Yeah, can I put my arm down?
You may. Put your arm down. So that's specialized locomotion, right? The treading air and flying so fast you can barely see them. All of that takes a ton of fuel.
It's sort of like a race car. So you have a very powerful engine. But to keep that powerful engine going, you need to come back to the pits and refuel it. The hummingbird's pits is every single flower that they visit, right? Like fuel here, fuel here, fuel here, and then they keep going.
All right, so let's say we're living in a world with no feeders, right? How many flower visits do they make a day?
So these are not different flowers, but it could be, you know, between 1,000 to 2,000 visits per day. So imagine, you know, having to go to, you know, a gas station and refuel 2,000 times a day.
It's almost like spending all of your gas in your car just to drive to the next gas station.
Right? So that's a lot of zinging for your supper. They're flying to feed just to feed more.
Yeah.
And so if it takes this much energy to hover, why bother?
I mean, yeah.
Well, Alejandro says hummingbirds started hovering because it gave them an advantage.
Originally, all plants were pollinated by insects. Then hummingbirds came.
In order to get at that sugar sauce, hummingbirds started flying a little less like birds and a little more like bugs.
Usually when you see, you know, a hummingbird pollinated flower, it's hard to see any branches around them. And especially, you know, like strong enough to support their weight. In order to feed on the flowers, you have to hover. That's the best way to get the nectar. They could, you know, try to hang from it, but it would be, you know, pretty awkward hanging upside down, especially given the fact that hummingbirds have tiny legs. So that's another big trait of hummingbirds, having tiny, tiny legs. Like when they're flying, you cannot even see them. You know, you can barely see like two dots and those are their legs. But they needed to hover, and hovering, then it became very expensive.
It's expensive in that hovering uses lots and lots of energy. So for these nectar inspectors, every pit stop is precious. So precious, their beaks evolved into perfect sugar straws. And because hummingbirds are such good pollinators, flowers evolved right along with them. They evolved to make their nectar easier for hummingbirds to get, but also to keep the insects out.
The flowers, they are just keeping the other insects that are, you know, like less good of a pollinator away, and they're just offering the resource to hummingbirds. So you get a very narrow entrance in which a bee, for instance, cannot feed through, but a thin hummingbird bill can.
Oh, no. Poor fat little bumblebee, it can't fit.
I know. I hate to kill your buzz.
Oh, no. I can just imagine, like, a bee getting stuck in, you know, like the Winnie the Pooh, where he gets, like, stuck halfway in the hole, and then his little, like, the cute little bumblebee butt sticking out.
Right, with the, yeah, head in a jar of...
Jar of honey, yeah. That analogy worked better than I thought.
Unlike your little buddy, Winnie the Bee, hummingbirds have avoided that compromising position by keeping their disproportionately large eyes on the nectary prize.
The hummingbird beak shape has evolved in crazy ways with the flower shape. And there are crazy examples, like the sickle-bill hummingbirds have the most curved bills. That's why they're called sickle-bill, right? It's like very, very sharply curved. And when you look at the flowers they feed from, it's exactly that. So it's logical to think that these modifications in the bill tip could be matching the flowers that they usually visit.
So the beaks evolved with the flowers up to a point. Up to a very, very sharp point. Did you like that drama?
Yes. It was a good build-up.
Thank you. And we will tell you all about it, Michaela, after the break.
You would never guess that's a hummingbird.
Right. You would guess that it was like a medieval nightmare.
Oh, no.
So, that's my restarting voice. Michaela.
Jorge.
You described hummingbirds as little fairies, right? Floating around feeders.
Yes.
Well, guess what? You and Alejandro are on the very same page.
They fly like fairies. They move, you know, secretly in the forests as fairies.
Yes.
But?
They are very feisty fairies.
And one reason these fairies are feisty is because they're freaking famished. So when they see other feathered friends feasting on their flowers, it can be infuriating. So for an example that's close to home, let's make like hummingbirds, stop dead in our tracks, and go backwards. Remember how I said there are two kinds of hummingbirds in your backyard, Annas and Rufus?
Yeah.
Well, in the winter, only the Annas stick around. The Rufus bail out and come back in the spring.
And when they come back, they start fighting like crazy with the Annas for the resources.
And they need to. They need those resources because unlike, say, bald eagles, who are just happy to laze around eating garbage out of a Burger King dumpster, it's not as easy to live the hummingbird life. Have you noticed that about bald eagles?
No. Seagulls, yes.
Seagulls and eagles. Filthy garbage birds. The road is hard enough for humbees as it is. They're constantly darting around, looking for enough food to survive. Now imagine adding other hungry, hungry hummingbirds to the equation, all competing for the same food. It's like Subaru's trying to find space in a Whole Foods parking lot. Feathers are going to get ruffled. Have you seen this? Have you seen hummingbirds flapping and scrapping?
Yes, absolutely. That is probably my favorite thing about watching them is they're just these cute little things, but then they're all of a sudden like squawking at each other, and we see them chase each other all the time, especially around the feeders.
Yeah. Setting fights like these is Alejandro's bread and bird seed.
So one of the lines of research in our lab is focused on how they fight. And it was unknown for a long time, the details of this, because all you can see when they're fighting is just this like commotion and then just brrr, and it happens like in fractions of seconds. And so with the high-speed cameras that we use, we can slow them down and see. And it's pretty intense, you know, those little battles that, you know, may be happening right now in your backyard and you have no idea.
When Alejandro says you have no idea, Michaela, he means it. One of his big discoveries is that some species of hummingbirds have evolved better ways to fight each other.
Whoa.
That was a little whoa. Prepare your big whoa.
Okay.
Because I want to send you a picture and we're going to text it to you now. And we will also put it on Instagram and on Spotify.
All right. Open. Oh, what? What is that? It looks like a shark. That's a shark's mouth that ends with like sharp pinchers. There's nothing cute about this.
To me, it looks like the devil's pet crocodile.
Yeah, crocodile. Yeah. But crocodiles don't have that like end part that's just meant for pinching.
Right. So what you're looking at is a very zoomed in picture of a hummingbird's beak. Would you mind describing it for our millions of listeners?
Okay, so it shows the end of the beak, and along the side are what looks like almost these toothed, like serrated knives at the side of the beak.
You're looking at a tiny Excalibur.
That's insane.
It is crazy. You would never guess that's a hummingbird.
Right. You would guess that it was a medieval nightmare.
I know.
Alejandro says, those little teeth are for giving your rivals a mean little preen.
The hypothesis is that they serve to pluck feathers of each other.
To rip out the feathers? That's like, you know, that's some dirty fighting, you know?
We're finding that the backward serrations help to increase the friction so you have a good hold when you bite, which is crazy that you don't think of hummingbirds as biters, but they do.
Like, there's no other reason for these beaks other than to fuck up other hummingbirds.
There are many hypotheses of why males have different, you know, belches.
Is that one of them?
That's one of them. That's
it. Probably not written that way.
But that's the gist, for sure. And that's like one example of a weapon.
So only male hummingbirds have this. And some species have that crocodile hook mouth. But there's another species whose beaks are straight up swords.
The dagger-like bill tips are much better for piercing. And the whole bill is more robust, you know, to stab.
These little criminals stab each other.
Yeah, exactly. So they sword fight with their beaks and they try to stab each other.
Oh, what? They're sword fights. That's like, that's what you would hope they would do for your like entertainment of like, oh, of course they're going to use the swords that are attached to their faces. No, they actually do. That's crazy.
So these battle royales are happening for all the reasons you might imagine, Michaela. Like for freedom, for glory, egalite, and also for flowers, and also for females.
The two Fs.
Yes, these flying fairies fighting ferociously for flowers and females.
Yes, well done.
When their lives are at stake and, you know, their reproduction is at stake, if they are equally matched, then nobody's retreating.
Right.
I have seen hummingbirds just going all the way to the ground and just, you know, keep pecking at each other and going crazy. I have talked to people that have seen these fights get to the point in which one of the hummingbirds don't make it, which is very rare, very, very rare, but it does happen.
Where one hummingbird kills another hummingbird.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And remember how I told you that the hummingbird bills and flowers co-evolved?
Yeah.
Well, that's why Alejandro's discovery is so surprising, right? Because these weaponized beaks seem to make it harder for hummingbirds to feed from flowers, not easier. So Alejandro's hypothesis is that this is all still about flowers. It's just a different payoff. So if you've got a good face weapon, you can keep other birds off your turf. And if there's no other birds around, you get to keep those sweet nectary thirst traps all to yourself.
You can monopolize the access to a large group of flowers. You still can't get nectar. Even if you do it worse than, let's say, females or other species, you can take your time right? Like you can be lousy at feeding because you have all the flowers you want, like to you, basically.
They're evolving better weapons, basically.
Yeah, that's what we're fighting. And we are both finding evidence in their morphology, so in the details of what these things look like at the very, you know, micro level, but also in their behavior. So the way they fight, the way they confront each other and their actual use of these things.
Yeah, so like weaponize your beak and then you can take your time and chill and enjoy your nectar drinks.
Exactly. And I guess that really is the lesson here, huh? A good weapon's better than a straw. So what do you think, Michaela? Are you worried?
Are they going to just start, like, stabbing everyone, take over the world?
Michaela, I think you're safe. but they do know where the food comes from. I was studying hummingbirds in Brazil, in this, you know, like, place in which the owner had been having feeders for, you know, over 20 years. And I was having breakfast inside and I started hearing like a knocking on the door, on the window, like, you know, like that. And then I turned around and there was a hummingbird like hitting the window. I told the owner and then he said, you know, very casually, like, oh yeah, I forgot to feel that feeder in that corner. And I was like, what? And then he said, yeah, they let me know when they run out of food. And it's like, wow. If that, you know, if this is really what's happening, it's impressive.
Oh my gosh. Whenever we go outside and a hummingbird will just like come right at you and it's like, oh, forgot to feed the feeder. And they definitely respond more to my dad because he's the one who consistently feeds them. And they'll go right up to his face to a point where he's like, I'm glad I'm wearing glasses. Are they going to like poke my eye out?
Okay, Michaela. I think that we have answered all of your questions except for one. You wanted to know whether you're doing the right thing by putting out feeders in the winter or whether you were like somehow playing humming god. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. The big question.
And Alejandra said, think of it as a way of giving back, right? So since human birds got here, hummingbirds have lost a lot.
So back then, there were natural flowers in the environment that we just wiped out and then just built houses and roads, you know, everything on top of it.
Yeah.
How I see it is that putting feeders and planting flowers that are hummingbird friendly is sort of like giving back some of those resources. It's hard for us to create a new reserve in the middle of the city, but given the impossibility to do so at large scale, then we can consider doing it in a small scale in our backyards. If you have a bunch of flowers, then you know, you're surely gonna have a hummingbird that decides that that's a good home.
Wow, that is honestly the answer I was really hoping for, but that's great coming from Alejandro. Gracias, Alejandro.
Muchísimas gracias, profesor.
Sí, un gusto, un placer. Gracias por la entrevista.
If you've got a question you can't find the answer to, and you've Googled it, you've DuckDuckGo'd it, you've asked your friends, families, coworkers, you've run it by your deity, well, then we are here for you. Call the hotline and tell us what you need to know. The number is 833-RING-ELT. That number, once again, is 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Hager Eldass, Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, Jorge Justin Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron, edited by Caitlin Kenny, scored by Billy Libby, Emma Munger, Bobby Lord, and Dara Hirsch, mixed by Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. Please refill my feeder. Goodbye.